Friends, last night I gathered with my family to celebrate the second night of Rosh Hashanah. This holiday, which marks the beginning of the new year in the Jewish faith, is the most meaningful of all holidays for me. In our family, it is marked by reunion first, reconnection with family members and near friends while sharing my Aunt Estelle's chopped liver recipe. And a little bit of vodka. We are, after all, Eastern European Jews. My cousin, Rabbi David Kudan, calls us together as the celebration candles are lit and blessings recited. We share bites of the challah with raisins, round to celebrate the turning of the year and raisins for sweetness, and remember those who are not at the table. My parents, David's grandparents, my cousin Barbara's mother, who we all knew and loved as Bubby. We share bites of apples and honey, as you have done today, to make sure that the new year will be sweet. And we tell stories from long ago and from just the last few weeks. Last night, I can tell you, it was stories about Bubby leading the fight for abortion rights. She was a physician, and there were lots of stories to tell. We remember, we honor our beloveds, and we gather in the spirit of renewal to pledge that we will make this next year a good one. There may be a few tears mixed in as well, but they are tears of love that come from remembrance. And for the next days, known liturgically as the days of awe, we will reflect on the past year. We will do what we can to make repair to those who we have hurt or harmed. We will do what we can to both forgive ourselves and, as the prayer that we just sang says, to begin again in love. During this time, the most holy of all Jewish holidays, the Book of Life is open for us as we strive to do better in the coming year and to make amends where they are called for. And on Yom Kippur, the 10th day of the festival, we recognize in prayer and humility that the page in the Book of Life is being turned as the next year begins. The past is sealed, and we move forward, hopefully, with the sure knowledge that we did all we could in the interregnum to resolve, restore, and repair our connections to the lives of others and our own. The Rosh Hashanah holiday is beautiful, but it is not about champagne and noisemakers, about drinking too much and snarfing too many hors d'oeuvres while the band plays on. The history of Rosh Hashanah can be traced back to the 6th century BCE, though the holiday was never mentioned in the Torah. The phrase Rosh Hashanah was first mentioned in the Mishnah, the first major written collection of Jewish oral laws in 200 CE, Christian era. Despite the fact that Rosh Hashanah occurs in the 7th month of the Hebrew calendar, the holiday in the fall of the year is designated as the Jewish New Year. The rabbis of old associated Rosh Hashanah with the Jewish meaning as the anniversary of the creation of the earth, or the creation of mankind. And it occurs in the 7th month, consistent with the 7th day of creation, the day of rest and reflection. So here we are called to pause and to reflect and to renew for what lies ahead. Some of our understanding of this holiday comes from the scholar and ethicist Maimonides, a 12th century Sephardic Jew who wrote about Jewish law and ethics. Maimonides believed that forgiveness is much less important than the repair work to which the person who caused harm is obligated to. Some of you know the phrase tikkun olam, to repair the world. Here on Rosh Hashanah, we focus on repair of connection to each other. The Hebrew word, traditionally translated as repentance, really means something more like return, and is focused on striving toward restorative justice. In this interpretation, it's important to return to the victim and for the perpetrator of harm to focus on coming back in humility and in intentionality, to work on behaving as the person we might like to believe we are, holding integrity at the core. Maimonides laid out 5 steps for this process, which inform our understanding of Rosh Hashanah. First, naming and owning harm. Second, starting to change or transforming. Third, making restitution and accepting consequences. Fourth, offering apology. And fifth, making different choices going forward. It's not difficult, I think, to apply this lens, these behaviors, to both our personal relationships and some of the most significant and painful issues of these complicated times. Systemic racism and the legacy of enslavement. Sexual violence and harassment in the wake of the Me Too movement. And Native American land rights, just to name a few. And I hope that you can see the connections between this history and the life that we lead as Unitarian Universalists and our living tradition with Judaism and Christianity at the core. The history that we draw from comes from many sources, which informs our own beliefs. Similarly, it's not that difficult to relate Maimonides' thinking and repair and restoration to what goes on in religious organizations like this one. In June, after many months of working on different drafts and exploring your thoughts, this congregation voted to affirm its first relational covenant, one that is designed to focus our attention on our behavior with one another and how it is that we respond when those relationships go wrong. This relational covenant, along with the congregation's newly voted mission statement, are in the insert sheet of your order of service today. And I hope that you will take a moment, perhaps not now, but later, to look at them. Relationships and how to keep them healthy are a major concern for congregations. I don't know of one anywhere in any faith tradition that doesn't have difficult people or challenging interactions. The question is, what happens when such things go awry? Do we continue to put up with it, and rather than acting in ways that might address the concern or restore relationship, just press on? Alternatively, do we decide to shrug it off, or talk to one another in the parking lot, or carry on and wait for the next confrontation to occur? Or do we instead embrace a way of being with one another that will hopefully support right relationship and move us forward? And what happens when all efforts at resolution and restoration fail? Do we declare it's just the way it is? Or do we try to leave the symbolic doors open for dialogue, repair, and hopefully restoration? In addition to that new relational covenant, this congregation is fortunate to have a committee on ministry and a lay pastoral care team to help. The committee on ministry, whose current members are Jody Anderson, Marianne Cutter, B. Fortin, and Dimitri Zark, are people who gather with the ministers to look at and support the overall health and ministry of the congregation. Among other things, they are also available to anyone in the congregation, member or friend or occasional visitor, to talk about their sense of how the ministry is going and to try and help resolve differences with the goal of also restoring healthy relationships. While their goal is to encourage and support direct conversation and interaction leading toward health, they can companion any of you as you reach out to share your feelings, thoughts, or work toward repair of relationships. Working in support of our congregational health as well are the members of the lay pastoral care team, who among other roles are available to you to provide a listening ear if anyone in the congregation is experiencing distress, pain, or anxiety around a part of their life, including life at church. The current members of that team are Plum Kennert, Andy LeCompte, Nancy Lawrence, and Bill Vanderklok. I think we all know that being in right relationship is hard work and not to be taken for granted. And at this time of year, or whenever we say to one another, we begin again in love, it's not a toss-off statement, but one that must be grounded in the commitments that Maimonides shared with us. Saying I'm sorry can be the easy part for a lot of us, though for some it can be a hurdle difficult to get over. Underneath I'm sorry needs to exist reflection, understanding of behavior, a way open to repair, while also understanding the impact and consequences of one's behavior and making a commitment to do things differently next time. So if someone says in passing, sorry, you might want to ask them, what do you mean by that? Or at least ponder that question. If in grounding our thinking and our attendant behaviors, we can carefully consider the steps that lead to not only apology, but renewal, the opportunities for us to move forward into the new day with a clearer sense of belonging may be in front of us. Why is this stuff so important, you may be asking? It's important for you as a congregation to be able to engage in what may be difficult conversations and also know how to seek resolution and repair if something hasn't gone right. Too many congregations, groups, individuals even find they have gotten into an uncomfortable or even harmful place and don't know how to get out of it or resolve it. And face it, talking about differences of opinion or perspective can be tough. Oftentimes, instead of moving forward with that conversation and exploration, we change the subject, avoid the person or persons, talk about it with our friends instead of those involved in the hurt or harm that occurred, or even disappear out the back door, never to be seen again. Rosh Hashanah, whether you identify as Jewish or not, whether you choose to celebrate this holiday or not, offers us an opportunity to understand that we can find a new way. One where, without raised voices, but with love in our hearts, we try to not only explore what happened, but seek the resolution and hopefully the common ground that can restore our relationships and our shared commitments to a goal, a congregation, a mutual endeavor, with mutual care for ourselves and for one another. And I want to acknowledge that it doesn't always work out. Reasonable people, as we know, may and will still disagree, and sometimes the road we need to travel and the feelings of pride, defensiveness, or anger may get in the way of moving forward. However, the hope, the intention, is for all parties to be able to meet and move from pain and anger toward renewal. That is, I admit, an aspirational goal. But in these days of awe, I also hope that for us all, it is a goal that we might embrace with love in our hearts as we venture forward into the days that will come to us in this new year. May it be so, and may this new year be sweet. Shana Tovah.